Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me today is Mike. How you doing?
Doing great.
And first time on the show, Wes, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Hey, great. So, all right. I guess it's my turn to start on a low note here. Something that we don't often talk about, we haven't been talking about on Ask an Atheist, that we're going to start talking about a lot more, is Scientology. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Scientology, but it's a church that was founded by science fiction author L. Ron Hubbard in the 1950s, I believe 1958 or 1959, as a self-help guru thing, which was very popular at the time. He screwed up his taxes, so he decided to turn it into a religion. That's basically how it went. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Sounds a bit. The self-help, Tony Robbins-style thing turned UFO cult.
Yeah, exactly. Now, everybody's going to think that we're talking about Scientology because of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes, who are recently in the news because they're getting a divorce, right? I mean, everybody's talking about it. TMZ is all a Twitter over it, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that Katie Holmes was scared because her child was reaching the age where he might be indoctrinated into the Church of Scientology.
Yeah.
I believe as a vessel for the soul of L. Ron Hubbard.
Ow, that kind of scares me a little. However, that's not what we're talking about. There is some news in the news today, and the son of the Scientology president, Heber Jentsch, was found dead on Tuesday. Alexander Jentsch, son of Church of Scientology International's president Heber Jentsch, was found dead in Los Angeles on June 3rd. A cause of death has not officially been determined yet. Details about the death are sketchy as of yet. As with all news about Scientology, it's very hard to find the kernels of truth in all of the flack. But an interview with Alexander's mother, who was cut off from her son after she was declared a suppressive person by Scientology in 2010, suggests that he was excessively self-medicating with prescription painkillers after a car accident, and when he developed breathing problems, he was given a touch assist rather than seeking medical attention.
Touch assist?
Now, okay, there's a lot of stuff in here that sounds like crazy Moon Man language, and that's because it is, but let's define some of it for a little bit. First thing is a suppressive person. According to Scientology, I'm a suppressive person. You're a suppressive person. Mike is a suppressive person. Wes is a suppressive person. And those of you listening to the show are now suppressive people. We have now spread the disease. It's somebody who has bad thoughts or overts about Scientology. And overts are just bad thoughts. They have this weird lingo. It's a cult phenomenon where it's like they're speaking English, but it's not quite English. They have their own dictionary. You're familiar with this.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like some of the more revolutionary socialists that I've met over the years. There's a lot of jargon that comes into it. And suppressive person is a word that they use to say an enemy of the church.
Exactly. In the media, it's being declared their form of excommunication, but it's a little bit further, because after you've declared a suppressive person, you're not allowed to talk to anybody in Scientology, including people you're married to, people you've given birth to, people you're related to. You're just not allowed to talk to any of them at all.
And you're also a potential target for harassment.
Exactly. And a touch assist is, it's like Reiki. I mean, a little bit. It's instead of seeking medical attention, they just touch you and think good thoughts, basically.
Yeah, like healing hands.
Yeah, that's basically what it is healing hands.
So a first level paladin would get this skill, or a level 3 Scientologist.
Right. No, level 3 Scientology is a little bit cooler than that, I've been told. Check all the court documents. It's well documented. It's just this energy transference thing. We've all seen it before. And it's supposed, you know, there's some documentation about what it's supposed to be for, but in Scientology they use it for everything. So, Karen de la Carrière, Alexander's mother, has not been allowed to see the body or speak to her son since her disconnection from Scientology in 2010. Even though Scientology has a memorial service written by Scientology's creator, L. Ron Hubbard, no memorial service for Alexander Jentsch will be held. Now, there's a very specific reason for this, and that's because Heber Jentsch, supposed president of Church of Scientology International, has not been seen publicly since 2004. And that's because he's in Scientology's, basically prison for church executives called the RPF hole. And, Mark Rinder, I think that's his name, he left the church a while ago, and he was like one of their, basically one of their bruisers, and he said he saw him at the church and other people who have left it. It's a crazy thing. The thing about this story is that it includes, it's a microcosm of all of the horrors of Scientology.
Yeah, it seems like we have abuse of church members. We've got, it just the crazy cult thing, labeling of enemies of the church, going after people. I mean, it's really creepy stuff.
It is. It is. And we're going to be talking about Scientology a little bit more often. We're actually scheduling a whole episode about Scientology in the next few weeks, hopefully next week, but we're still putting it together. We've got some interviews coming up that should be very interesting. So, yeah, that's the news. Expect us to be talking about it. So, Peggy's challenge. So, would you like to describe Peggy's challenge for us?
Yes. I believe it's a couple months now. We've been doing this for quite a while. Peggy from Kent, Washington, issued a challenge to our viewers to help support us that there are not a lot of representation for atheists, non-believers, skeptics in the media. This is one of the few outlets where we can actually have a voice to talk about the news. And we need your support. So who is actually giving to us this week?
Okay, we have Chris from Horseheads, New York, Sean from Ontario, Canada, and Dan from the United Kingdom.
So, yeah, if you like what we do, you like what we say, you just like the idea that, you know, atheists have a voice somewhere in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click the yellow button, I believe on the left-hand side of the screen that says donate, and help us out. This commercial radio costs money.
So, like I said, it's the Alexander Jench story that really got my attention and made me decide to bring the Scientology subject a little bit closer up in our schedule. But, I mean, there is a lot of crazy stuff going on with the divorce, with the Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes soul of the vessel of L. Ron Hubbard. How did you describe that?
Well, I would say that it'd probably be like the plot of the bad guy Vigo in Ghostbusters 2.
Mm.
That essentially that this child has been raised in a certain way to at one point be involved in some sort of ritual where I guess the Thetan of L. Ron Hubbard comes down and creates a new messiah or something.
Will there be a dancing toaster?
I hope so. I'm sure that there's a lot of crazy... They do have a department of scientific technology or religious technology, don't they?
They do, they do.
So perhaps a dancing toaster could come through that part?
Fair enough. Now, we're going to be talking a little bit more about other fictional events, other Superman-type stuff today, aren't we, Mike?
Yeah. Well, Tom Cruise seems to actually believe that after a certain point in Scientology, you become immune to disease. I tend to put characters like that into fiction,
right,
whether they come from the Bible or they come from, I guess you could say, Mission Impossible 3. That I tend not to believe in.
Is that Horse Protocol? What was the name of that one?
Ghost Protocol.
Ghost
Protocol,
okay.
I heard it was actually pretty good, despite the fact that Tom Cruise is crazy and intense like a border collie.
Okay. Well, I mean, that sometimes a movie calls for that, doesn't it?
Well, he's a good actor. He's just crazy.
Okay.
He plays crazy very well, though.
That's true. That's some movie that you wanted me to watch. Was it Tropic Thunder?
Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil anything, but he's probably the biggest, best part of that movie.
All right. So he's a good actor, even though he's got a weird, crazy Superman religion.
Yes. Moving on.
Okay.
So I guess what I wanted to talk to you about today is Superman to a certain extent. And it sounds silly, but I'm going to have to build some foundation here so that you realize I am making a serious point. I'm just using popular fiction to do so.
Okay.
So one of the big questions that we get asked all the time here at Ask an Atheist, and I'm sure atheists around the world get asked, is if you don't believe in God, where does your morality come from?
Mm.
One of the big arguments that religious people throw down all the time is they get their religion, their belief system, they get their morality, they get it from a Bible, they get it from religion.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true for a second.
I've always said that I get it from the same place, you know, that we've said this, that we get it from the same place they do. We absorb it basically because we're a member of this culture.
Cultural osmosis in a certain sense.
Yeah.
So when you look at the Bible, even the most strident fundamentalist doesn't do the stuff in that book.
No.
They're not going to call... Most Christians in the modern world are not going to call for killing a woman because she's not a virgin on her wedding night.
Right.
Or forcing a woman to marry a rapist. Or a death penalty for gays or witches or blasphemers. You're not going to find a lot of Christians that are going to get on that bandwagon. And you know what? Thank goodness. Because... all of us, not just the Christians, but us, almost anybody in the world, with the exception of just the nut jobs, and they are out there who do this, we are better than the Bible.
Yeah.
So again, where do we get our morality? Like you said, Sam, we get it from the culture around us. We get it from upbringing. We get it from a natural human empathy that we can feel others' pain, and we can get it from the things that we're exposed to. And the things that we watch, the things that we read. And for me, that means that I've
here it
been,
comes.
Well, yes, I've been exposed to a lot of science fiction, a lot of comic books, a lot about superheroes. And, I would say that they've affected me in many of the same ways that the writings of George Orwell or Kurt Vonnegut or Christopher Hitchens have influenced the way that I've seen things, brought forth arguments, or even just metaphors for things that can be said. Superheroes have affected me in that same way.
Sure.
They've affected the way that I look at morality, the way that I look at ethics, or that my duties and responsibilities when it comes to having any kind of power. That we're talking about a mythology. They fill my need for stories, mythology, morality tales, metaphor, that a lot of people usually toss out on religion. And the bonus, of course, is that I don't actually have to believe that these stories are true, and I don't. Spider-Man's not a real guy. Hate to break it to you. So, you know, in fact, I think I get more out of them because I don't think that these stories are true.
Sure.
But I'm going to lay it out here because this is a thesis for everything I'm going to talk about today. Superhero comics, I would say that when you compare them to the morality portrayed in your average superhero comic, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, whatever, is going to top the morality that you get for any character that appears in the Bible. It doesn't matter if it's Jesus, Moses, even God of the New or Old Testament. Because really, when you get down to it, over the years, my belief system, whether it's my morality, my politics, my moral compass, it kind of comes down to one idea, which is that I hate bullies.
Okay.
I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to define that, when I'm talking about bullies, I'm talking about people who think that they have power, and therefore it gives them rights over other people. Whether it means that they can just kick around a smaller, weaker person, take from them without, you know, asking their permission, or without just cause, and just thinking that you have the right to punish people for just saying no to you.
Right.
And I look at the God of the Bible and most of these characters, and I see a collection of bullies.
All right.
That's what I see. I see a bunch of people who think that
Well, just bullies or bullies and people who are bullied on?
The main characters of it, I don't see a lot of characters that are on the other side of being bullied, with the exception of a character like, say, Job,
mm-hmm.
who is bullied right. by God so that he can win a bet with the devil.
Yeah.
I would say that Abraham is both a bully and a victim of bullying.
Okay.
That you have a character that's told to murder his own son,
mm-hmm.
Largely so that a character can feel good about himself. So when you get to this kind of behavior in a comic book, you have a character who gives a long, flowery speech about how their absolute power gives them the right to rule over the weak and the lowly people. You're talking about a supervillain.
Sure.
So when I look at these characters in the Bible, I see supervillains.
Now, we both know that modern fiction, actually fiction throughout the last 2,000 or so years, really likes to pull from the Bible for tropes, for basically basic story ideas. The Jesus image is really, I mean, how many movies has the Jesus image destroyed in science fiction? Let's talk about that for a moment.
The Matrix.
Yeah.
I would say Doctor Who's used some Christ imagery.
Sure.
In the last part of the Russell D. Davis run, yeah. Which is odd because he's an atheist.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Superman has used it several times, including Superman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
The image of, you know, Jor-El sending his only son to another planet to be their savior. Of course, Superman, of course, doesn't have a lot of the bat attributes, which is, of course, the point.
Sure.
He's a creation of the 20th century, not the first century.
Unless he's got red kryptonite.
Yeah, then you get some other problems.
See, I'm familiar enough that I can do that. But that's kind of the thing. So how much of it do you think is that Superman, that they're just learning from the mistakes that, say, mythology made?
Well, I think it's a fact that every moral discussion is about learning from the mistakes of previous stories.
Okay.
We're having a constant evolution of what our morality looks like.
Yeah.
And back then, you know, don't do this or I'll murder you and set you on fire forever may have been better than the alternative, but that doesn't make it good.
Okay.
And that Superman is obviously something that has come in the more modern era. He was created in 1938.
Yeah.
And as a better example,
I'm coming at this not from like a complete skeptic, but I'm coming at it from a skeptical position. I'm just wondering how much of, you know, how much Jesus DNA made it into Superman.
Well, how much previous DNA made it into Jesus?
Well, exactly my point. That doesn't a very good point, but it doesn't really invalidate my point, is maybe Jesus, maybe Superman is better than Jesus, but that's because how much of him is Jesus?
Well, I think everything is a game of telephone. I don't know how much is left over and how much...
I mean, they were both invented by Jews, right?
Yes. Okay. Actually, Siegel and Shuster, the two creators of Superman, were both Jewish in 1938.
So there you go.
So talking about just this idea of where our morality has come, I wanted to play a little game with you guys.
Okay.
I call this Dr. Doom versus Yahweh.
Okay. Let's do one, then we'll go into the break and finish it off.
So to give you a quick quote, I wanted to give you a quick thing of who Dr. Doom is, then we'll take a break, we'll come back, and I'll throw out some quotes.
All right.
Dr. Doom is a tyrant of a fictional country called Latveria. He spends a lot of time fighting with the Fantastic Four and trying to take over the world. He gives a lot of grandizing, you know, purple prose speech. He was probably a drama major.
Yeah.
And he's constantly making speeches about his own power and how his intellect and his power give him the rights over the universe.
Yeah.
And my point is, there is not a lot of difference between him and the God of the Old Testament.
Oh, wow. And you're not making an adversary comparison. You're making a comparison between Dr. Doom and God.
I'm saying, quite simply, that the God of the Bible is a supervillain. I have quotes to back it up, and after the break, I really want to share them.
Oh, man. I can't wait for this. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to be comparing Dr. Doom to the Abrahamic God when we come back from the break. This will be interesting.
Join Seattle Atheists for Atheist Bible Study Saturday, July 14th. Author and journalist Edward Falzon will discuss his book, Being Gay is Disgusting, or God Likes the Smell of Burning Fat, an accurate but irreverent chapter-by-chapter paraphrasing of the five books of Moses. Stop by the 2100 building on July 14th at 1 p.m. for the Seattle leg of this biblical morality tour. Refreshments and discussion to follow. Visit seattleatheists.org for details. That's seattleatheists.org.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV. The world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And before we went into the break, Mike gave us a really, told us that he was going to be comparing Dr. Doom with Yahweh, right?
Yeah, Dr. Doom, one of the prototypical supervillains of the Marvel Universe, has a lot in common with Yahweh.
All right.
I'm going to read some quotes, and you can play along at home, but Sam and Wes are going to play along here.
Okay.
Sounds fun. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because both of these characters are dramatic and like to speak in third person, when appropriate, I'm going to use the name Steve instead of their name, it doesn't give away who they are.
Is this the Bob Dole's going to do what Bob Dole's going to do kind of speech?
They speak very similarly to that, actually.
All right.
So here's the first quote. Get ready. Is this God? is this Dr. Doom. They will cringe at my approach and bow in my presence, and they will do it in fear for their very lives, and I will be pleased.
All right.
I'm going to say that Doom said this only because there was a reference. Well, he actually said I.
Okay. Wow, that is pretty convincing. But bow in my presence, that's a pretty common trope for, that's a pretty common Old Testament trope, so I'm going to go the other way on it.
Okay. Actually, that was Dr. Doom.
It was Dr. Doom. All
it
right.
was Dr. Doom.
I'm already down one. All right.
Okay, so Wes, you got one, Sam, zero.
Yeah.
Play along at home, children.
All right.
Okay, here's the other one. Let all the world fear Steve. Let all the world, people of the world revere him, for he spoke and it came to be. He commanded and it stood firm.
I'm going to go with the Doom on this one. That's just a little too flowery.
I don't know. Can I? Yeah, I'm going to go with Doom.
That's actually Yahweh.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In Psalms 33:8. Psalms are a treasure trove for this sort of thing.
All right. I'm strike two.
Okay. Sam, you got zip? One for Wes?
Yeah.
Okay, number three. Serve Steve with fear, with trembling bow down in homage, lest Steve be angry and you perish from the way in a sudden blaze of anger. Happy are all who take refuge in Steve.
That's gotta be Doom.
Doom.
Nope.
That is
Yahweh in Psalms 2:11.
Okay, apparently don't know Dr. Doom that well.
Okay. And the final quote.
All right.
Actually, no, there's two more. One of them is gold.
All right, here we go.
Okay. Yes, the world is mine, to mold as I see fit, to create a world as only Steve might.
That really sounds godlike, but I'm going Doom. On this.
The world is mine. It's like he's claiming ownership, where God doesn't claim ownership, he assumes ownership.
You are both correct.
Yes,
that is
I got
Dr.
one.
Doom. All right, this is a big one. This may decide everything.
Okay, here we go.
You will be a reproach and a taunt, a warning and an object of horror to the nations around you when I inflict punishment on you in anger and in wrath and with stinging rebuke. I, Steve, have spoken. When I shoot at you with my deadly and destructive arrows of famine, I will shoot to destroy you. I will bring more and more famine upon you and cut off your supply of food. I will send famine and wild beasts against you, and they will leave you childless. Plague and bloodshed will sweep through you, and I will bring the sword against you. I, Steve, have spoken.
Doom.
I don't know. God likes to talk about plague. He's big on plague. He's big on famine. I mean, Doom just wants to crush your little... What I know about Doom is he wants to crush your, you know, crush your little bodies and join my country. But God wants to, like, wipe out everything around him. So, area of effect, I guess? I don't know.
Oh, but Doom, he loves to be worshipped.
Well, so does God. They have that in common.
They do.
I'm going with God. Like, you want Doom?
Yep.
All right. So just to see what happens, I'm going to go with God on that one. And that's the only time I'm going to say, I'll go with God.
It is God.
Ha! Yes!
Ezekiel 5:15-17. Now, it seems like, you know, I'm just making a joke here, but really, seriously, in terms of temperament and tone, I don't see a lot of difference here.
That was way more fun than it should have been. That's creepy. I want to stop and think about this for a minute. Just take a breath and go, was that 2 out of 7? And it's the God that all these nice people believe in versus Dr. Doom, Reed Richards, what's his name?
Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, his bad guy? And
yes.
I'm surprised you didn't have one that could go either way, to be honest with you.
It was one that I've actually, before I came on the episode, I tested this against some of my comic book friends who are atheists.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of people stumped.
I mean, this is... I don't know where you're obviously a comic book guy a little bit.
I grew up with him, yeah.
Okay. Is this common? I mean, what?
Doom talks like this all the time.
But, oh, man.
Yeah.
All the time.
Now,
anybody in comics loves, I mean, any of the big villains, they always have their big self-aggrandizing moments that they just love to... Just to pump themselves up.
Well, it's sort of their moment in the sun before the hero of the story comes in and knocks everything down, right?
Yeah, sees them, you fools. He's getting away.
Right, right. Yeah. And But, I mean, are they pulling from the Old Testament for Doctor Doom?
I wouldn't say that they're doing it intentionally.
Even if they aren't, or even if they are, it's almost worse if they are, because then that's sort of a tacit acknowledgement that the Old Testament God's kind of a jerk.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
Well, I've always seen, yeah, it's a great source for evil tales. So why not pull from a source that everybody knows?
Yeah.
And what I really pull from this, what I really get is that when you take the belief, the dogma that these guys are the good guys and that these guys are real, you just throw that out the window, it is remarkably easy to judge the morality of the characters in the Bible.
Okay.
That you don't hear a lot of professional apologists talking about, you know, oh, well, Lex Luthor or the Joker or Thanos, they have a plan for all of us, and we should really just trust in it because our mortal minds just can't understand the complexity.
And people aren't using Brainiac as the font of all morality. It's they're not using these villains, because the thing about God is that he says all these terrible things, but when you say right at the outset that anything God does is by definition moral because he owns the joint, then yeah, you can get away with anything.
My power makes me right. My power gives me the right over you.
Yeah.
And they use the exact same excuses that many Christian apologists do, whether you just don't understand, your feeble minds do not understand the glory of Doom.
Wow, I just the magnitude of this is just hitting me now. If you give that's
that
well, whenever you say that somebody is omnibenevolent, I mean that right there combined with this, you just kind of put the bad stuff to the side and just pay attention to the oh, he must be good. There must be a reason for it.
Right, right.
These are bullies. These are people who honestly think that their power gives them the right over others' lives. That if somebody inconveniences them or just insults them, they have the right to kill them or right. Stomp them beneath the feet of doom.
Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And today we're talking about the relative merits between superheroes and the heroes of Christianity.
Yeah, and if these guys are really good guys, then, and this is the highest morality, this is God.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have some good guys act the way that people do in the Bible. What would happen if a good guy in a comic book acted like a Bible character?
Oh, wow.
So can you imagine if Superman became so disgusted with the city's high crime rate and moral bankruptcy, he was just so angry that he decided to rain fire down on it and completely wipe out everyone in the city? That maybe he let, you know, Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane out of the city first and said, you guys are good, everyone else is terrible, I'm going to murder everybody else.
Wow. Okay.
God did that.
Yeah, that's
he
true.
Did that in Genesis. Sodom and Gomorrah completely wiped them out.
Yeah, it's one of the foundational stories for Christian morality. If you're not moral, God will turn you into a pillar of salt and kill everybody you know.
Just for showing a bit of empathy for the people who left behind, seeing them as human beings.
Right.
It gets even worse than that. Now, imagine now Aquaman, okay. The king of the seven seas. The
I was wondering when we would see Aquaman. Hello, Aquaman.
Swift and powerful monarch of the oceans.
Hello, old friend.
Imagine he's out on patrol, and he spots a large group of children on the beach. The children make fun of Aquaman and insult him.
Okay.
So he commands a group of sharks to tear the children to shreds.
Sounds familiar.
I could actually see Aquaman kind of doing that after a while. Really, I mean.
Yeah, this is exactly what the prophet Elisha did.
Yeah,
except
yeah.
He used bears.
Wait, no, not Aquaman, that other guy in the ocean that everybody likes talking about.
Oh, Namor the Submariner.
It sounds like something he'd do.
Yeah, he's kind of a jerk. Aquaman's a bit nicer than him. He doesn't go back and forth hero, villain like Andy Kaufman.
Okay.
But imagine that, tearing children to shreds just for making fun of you. That's what the prophet Elisha did. They made fun of him because he was bald.
Yeah.
Obviously a sore thing.
Yeah.
And
so you're kind of, are you kind of here feeling...
I've never ordered animals to kill somebody before.
Okay. I mean, I have, but it was a goldfish in full knowledge that nothing would happen. So, you know, I mean...
I like to think that I can take an insult.
Okay.
And that I don't need to murder children. I think in the Bible, this was like 50 kids pointing and laughing at the bald prophet. He's like, oh, curse you. And these bears came and tore the children to shreds, killed them.
Was it 40 or 50? Becky likes to say 40 is sort of the standard number for a large group in the Bible.
One bear is enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
It's certainly the terror it inflicts on the other kids that run away.
40, 50, who really cares? I mean, that's a lot of kids.
It's still bears murdering children because of baldness. Fair point.
I mean, this is pure supervillain shtick. This is the way bad guys act.
Yeah.
I mean, when you actually take this Aquaman is a really evil guy who murders children with sharks.
Yeah.
I don't know a version of that story that makes him the good guy. And I don't know anyone that, if that story actually happened, would make an excuse for him.
Right, right.
So here's the thing, is occasionally those stories do pop up in comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this, the internet has been a big fun of collecting memes, and one of them is this thing they call, I don't know if I can say it, but Super Dickery.
Yeah, yeah.
It's essentially a collection of old comic book covers and scans of comic books where Superman usually is just acting like a horrible human being, like he's forcing Jimmy Olsen to marry a gorilla.
Well, it was from the time when they would have a Superman comic released every other day, right? So they were like doing Superman goes to get a haircut, Superman buys a new pair of shoes, Superman
tortures his friends
because he's bored.
Yeah, there was a lot of these imaginary stories, or like you said, Red Kryptonite that makes him act crazy, or he's mind controlled, or it's somebody's bad dream. They would do a ton of these stories where Superman would like team up with Batman and hold Jimmy Olsen and Robin at gunpoint and make them dig their own graves. This is an actual comic book cover. You can Google it.
It's beautiful. You know, Batman is holding a Tommy gun on him.
What?
Yeah.
I thought Batman's, except for like the very early days, his whole point was that he didn't shoot people.
Yeah, Superman says something like, "Well, my code against killing prevents me from murdering you," and then Batman's like, "Ha ha, that's okay, I'll do it." So,
wow.
Listen to the reaction to something like this. You know, we laugh at it because, one, it's ridiculous.
Yes.
And it's terrible. And you don't see any, even the most hardcore Superman fans going, "Well, you know, you need to understand the context of what Superman was doing in that time and place." Right. No, nobody does that. Nobody plays William Blaine Craig apologist with Superman. We laugh at it because it's terrible and because it's shocking.
Yeah.
Contrast this with William Lane Craig specifically, Christian apologist, scholarly philosopher.
Philosopher extraordinaire, yeah, just, Esquire.
Yeah, so
exactly.
Let's say this. William Lane Craig, he's a popular theologian. He just boggles the mind with his ability to make excuses. I mean, for some of the worst things, like there's a Bible passage, there's several Bible passages where Hebrews just wipe out an entire race of people.
Right.
In one case, the Canaanites. This quote here that I'm about to read is the reason Richard Dawkins has said that he will never debate William Lane Craig ever, because he basically divorces himself from being considered for the role of moral human being.
Okay.
You know who the bad guy is when the Canaanites get wiped out?
It's the Canaanites, right?
Yeah, it's the Canaanites. You know who the poor, picked upon person you're supposed to feel sorry for is?
The guys with the guns.
Yes, slaughtering children.
Okay.
So that's where his sympathy goes. This is an actual quote. The real victim, the Hebrew soldier.
All right.
This is his quote. Actual words. I am not making this up.
Go! Okay.
"I think the most difficult part of this whole debate is the apparent wrong done to the Israeli soldiers themselves. Can you imagine what it would be like to have to break into some house and kill a terrified woman and her children? The brutalizing effect on these Israeli soldiers is disturbing."
Wow. Okay, this is mind-boggling. First, we're talking about Hebrew. In this case, the historical Hebrews does not equal Israeli. He's making a modern historical connection that isn't quite... It doesn't match up quite right, because modern Israel is several of those types of tribes, if I remember properly. I know Becky can come and correct me if she wants. But then the other thing is, didn't people use those excuses during the... Let me go Godwin here. Didn't people use those excuses during the Nuremberg trials?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just following orders. And that's the thing, is that this horrible thing, this poor soldier wading through blood, had to kill this children. And the argument he uses, the Canaanite adults, they're just bad.
Yeah.
But the kids, you'd have to think the kids are at least innocent. No, says William Lane Craig. He says, no, in fact, this is a kindness, because not only are they taken away from these horrible people who would have raised them into horrible adults, but they're getting a fast track to heaven now. So he's just got like, that's not a sword, that's a heaven pass.
Okay, so here I was rolling in, thinking it's gonna be a fun episode. We're gonna talk about comic books, it's gonna be fun. We're gonna relax, and then right in the middle of this, William Lane Craig siding with child murderers. I was not expecting that.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's got a dogma. He's got a pre-decided notion that these are the good guys no matter what, and he will selectively pick his evidence to make sure they are still the good guys.
Yeah.
People see Superman throw Lois Lane into space, and they go, wow, that is really messed up. They laugh because it's ridiculous, it's terrible, but people are like, well, you need to understand something about Superman. That's really hard to kill somebody like that. I mean, imagine what it does to him.
Yikes.
Nobody does that.
So did J. Michael Straczynski wrote for Superman for a while, didn't he?
Not well.
Oh, okay. So did he do any... okay. J. Michael Straczynski is also the creator of Babylon 5. Now, this is cross-nerdery. One of my favorite science fiction television shows. And apparently he wrote for Superman and apparently did very poorly.
It was a terrible run. I'm not getting into it. I just say, just don't read it. If you want to read something good from J. Michael Straczynski, I haven't seen Babylon 5, but his run on Thor for Marvel is excellent.
So did he... And the thing is I kind of knew that nobody liked his run on Superman. Did he make Superman do some of these weirder things, or what was it about it that didn't work?
Well, he just made Superman whiny. That I think, for the most part, I want to see Superman fight bad guys.
Okay.
I don't want to see Superman as a mopey character who whines and complains about how hard life is. He's an optimistic character. He's a character that represents the best in people.
Okay.
So basically, he turned him into a little whiny emo kid.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Precisely that.
I think you could draw a parallel to some characters in the Bible that way, but it would be a weird connection otherwise. So
yeah. Again, it seems like we're just picking on the Old Testament here.
Yeah.
Let's go a little newer.
Ooh.
Nice. The New Testament isn't much better because it's a New Testament where the idea of hell comes into play.
Right.
That when the Hebrews of the Old Testament wiped you out, they were done with you. God was done with you. It wasn't like you were going to get... eternity of flames and gnashing of teeth and the fire that can't be quenched.
Sure.
That wasn't going to happen. That comes with Jesus meek and mild, as Christopher Hitchens likes to say.
Yeah.
So,
like to say.
Yeah, he does. Well, like he to did. Say. I'm sure with a Ouija board, he might say it again.
Oh, no.
Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
So, Christians like to hold up the John 3:16 signs of football games and things like that.
Yeah.
They don't like to read further, because when you start going through John 3:18, 3:19, that's where the or else comes in, where it says that whoever does not believe stands condemned already because they have not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. So it's like, yay, we're going to offer you all this stuff, but if you say no, it's going to cost you.
You're going to get thrown into space. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Again, we're comparing biblical heroes to superheroes. We'll be back after the break.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Stop throwing money away.
Shop with NetPro Ink and Toner and save up to 60% off your printing cost. All of our compatible cartridges have a 100% full-year quality guarantee. Visit us at www.netprotx.com. That's NetProtx.com.
No human is burdened with original sin, nor condemned to live in guilt, nor in need of salvation from the supernatural. I'm Eileen, Vice President of Humanists of Washington, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancement through reason, science, and democracy. Our organization opposes the use of dogma in determining laws and strongly supports marriage equality in Washington. A full range of civil rights is necessary to achieve full personal empowerment in society. Get involved at humanistsofwashington.org.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no-cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and I kind of wish I had the theme to McHale's Navy right now, because we just learned that Ernest Borgnine died, just now. Yeah. Gonna have to go watch Merlin's Shop of Mystical Horrors or whatever that is.
As I like to call it, the Hallmark Channel's version of Tales from the Crypt. Oh.
Yeah, not his best film compared to Red, you were saying.
Red, Red was awesome. He had a great bit part in there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's been in 80 million movies, I think.
Escape from New York?
Escape from New York. Wow. A lot of TV that I liked. Dang. Just happened. Anyway. Back to
Atrocity.
Back to Atrocity. Wait, was Ernest Borgnine in any superhero movies? I think he was.
I don't know. I believe so. Oh, okay. I could be completely wrong, but it's slipping my mind.
Okay. Airwolf? So, does Airwolf count?
I think Airwolf. Is the helicopter a superhero in this case?
I think so.
Okay, so I'll count it.
All right. Anyway.
So we were talking a bit about these sort of atrocities and the fact that this beautiful gift that God offers you in the Bible, in the New Testament, that Jesus, he's died for you to offer you this, comes with a bit of a catch.
Right.
And that catch is complete obedience and servitude and just breaking down any sort of individuality you have.
Yeah.
That you are now and that's what gets me is that Superman doesn't do that. We're talking a bit about how morality has evolved. That a character of the 20th century, it sounds completely different than one of that. That Superman gets worship offered to him sometimes. There's a number of stories where Superman saves a space shuttle or pulls someone out of a burning building and they want to worship him. And he's made really uncomfortable by this.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he's saving somebody without coercion. He's not demanding worship.
Except for those alternate universe stories.
Except for the alternate Red Kryptonite stories and stuff like that, which we can laugh at. This isn't typically a character that is going to demand something or say, burst into a burning building or a crashing plane and say, all right, before I do this, I'm going to need something from you people. As I like to say, Superman will save you whether you believe in him or not.
Right.
If you think he's an urban legend or something.
In the context of Superman,
That he's not a real character, but in the universe that he does exist, he doesn't put conditions on saving people.
Right.
He doesn't use it as a means to get his foot in the door, to sell you a timeshare in heaven. He doesn't try to guilt trip you and saying, you know, I got killed by Doomsday a while back, and I did that for you, and now you owe me something.
Ouch.
And you just don't get that. You know what it sounds like? Again, like another supervillain in the Superman universe, General Zod.
Okay.
And anyone who's seen Superman 2?
Yes, I have. Okay, I have to admit, it has been a while, but I did see it.
So Superman 2, you might recognize him. In a lot of ways, General Zod is very similar to the Master from Doctor Who. Yes.
That was exactly what I was just thinking, is I actually had to put a few Masters away to remember General Zod, because there is a lot of similarity there.
Same haircut, same beard, same manner of speaking, really. Basically, he's a general from Krypton, that he's the same species, has the same powers as Superman, but he's a dictator, and he wants to rule the world, surprisingly.
And he got trapped in some cellophane for a while.
Yes, he did. He got in a little pane window, and it blew up, and he came to Earth and started, brutalizing people, scaring them with displays of power, and saying, kneel before Zod! Kneel before Zod, son of Jor-El!
Okay.
And thinking that, hey, I'm really powerful here, therefore I have a right to rule this place.
So you're saying that General Zod is the Jesus figure in that movie?
He'll protect you, and I believe General Zod thinks that he would do a better job running the planet, and things would be safer, it would be more orderly, more secure, but you have to trade something for it, much in the way that, you know, that North Korea, Kim Jong-il, would have loved you and protected you, provided you never say no to him or do anything that he doesn't want you to do ever.
If you break
that rule, consequences!
That is the weird thing about North Korea. It's all of these ridiculous things that, like, these dystopic dictator fantasies that occur in movies, but it's in real life and people are really dying because of it. It's weird to me.
And why would you want to worship a being that puts that kind of ultimatum in front of you? This is the God that a lot of Christians openly worship. Not just like, oh, you're misrepresenting, that's not the God I believe in. There are people that, when I describe this God, they're all for it. There was an interview that Christopher Hitchens did on Todd Friel's radio show.
I remember it well.
Todd Friel was a contemporary of Ray Comfort and Kirk Cameron, part of the Living Waters ministry thing. I think it's like Scumbag Radio. I forget what the name of his show is.
No, it really is something like that. It's weird.
I don't know why he calls it that, but the guy's a jerk, and he's an idiot.
Okay.
So anyways, at one point in the debate with Hitchens gets him to admit that he believes that he is a slave of this tyrant.
Yeah,
that, as Hitchens says, you call yourself a slave and are proud of your chain. Because the guy asked Hitchens straight out, do you believe that anything, that somebody that powerful would have rights on your life? Meaning the same way that I would view a fly that landed on my arm, I could just swat it.
Yeah, I thought like it's, you know, rights on your life, like rights on this copper mine that I have over here. Like I could just sort of exploit it whenever I have the resources to do so. It was really creepy the way he would talk about it.
That this person is a means to an end, yeah. And when it displeases me, I can hurt it.
Mm-hmm.
And whip it until you're a farm animal to this thing.
Sure.
So really, we were talking about this. Todd Friel is kneeling before Zod,
yeah.
And he's happy for it.
Yikes.
it's weird though, because I mean, it seems silly that I'm talking about this in terms of comic books, but this is really in a lot of ways shaped the way I see this, because I'm conditioned that there's certain characters that appear in a comic book story when they act this way. I'm like, yep, telegraph. There's the bad guy.
I'm gonna challenge you on one thing that you said though, and that is that this is the god that people worship. And I don't think when they sit down and they pray or they go to church and they talk about sort of the modern happy God that, you know, sort of the stripped down for today's community God, this is not the God that they're thinking about. I think they're just sort of, it's an evolved God. It's a concept that's evolved over time as the morality of the people who believe in it has gotten better. They've dragged their God kicking and screaming along with it.
Oh, I agree.
And when you finally, unfortunately, but because they have this dogma and they have to believe what the Bible says, they're not thinking about this guy who killed all the Canaanites or whatever, when they think about God, but then because it's in their book, they have to believe it.
I would actually go back the other way with that their little God box just keeps on getting smaller and smaller, that he just keeps on being less important to them.
Right.
And their morals are derived from society around them.
Okay.
I guess I agree with that. I agree with both of what you guys just said, but I would also add that they're still talking about the king of the universe.
Right.
And it isn't, for me, I know that most Christians aren't worshiping I don't know if most Christians aren't. I really don't know. I haven't looked at the stats, but there are certainly a lot of Christians that do worship the brutal, horrible God.
There are a few, specifically.
Westboro.
Yeah, in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't trying to say that their God isn't as terrible as we think it is. What I'm trying to say is that when you say that this is the God that they worship, it's suggesting that they would actually agree with the slavery and the slaughter and the kidnapping and the rape that's in the Bible when they specifically don't. That's the point I'm trying to make there.
I guess I should clarify a little bit. I guess I'm not saying that this is what most people worship.
Right.
What I'm saying is there's a lot of people that do.
Okay.
And when the questions of the Canaanites and the slaughter and the rape and the worship and all that stuff, they'll find people that will, it's amazing, people that would never tolerate this stuff in a modern context, making excuses for it in a past context.
Right.
I've met people that are wonderfully progressive, decent people that if they saw these sort of atrocities on the street would at the very least call the cops, at the very best, maybe even intervene.
Right.
But if a Bible character, if Moses does it, suddenly it's okay. And it's that belief, it's that dogma, the idea that this is a self-evident idea, that this book is good, these characters are good, this God is good, mm-hmm. therefore their acts are good.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So I have an idea about sort of the mythology that superheroes thing, and I was going to ask you about this, is when in the Middle Ages and basically when after Christianity sort of took over the Western world, when people were looking for mythologies to sort of use in their art that was specifically non-religious, they would cling on to sort of Greek and Roman mythology, and as they would use them as archetypes for these ideas in human society. They didn't believe in them, but they were powerful symbols in literature. Is this, with superheroes, is it kind of the same thing, you think? Or?
I think it plays a lot of it. It touches on the same ideas, the same imagery, the same metaphors.
Right.
As these gods who are basically in the religious graveyard that they used to be believed in, but now they're just mythological figures like Hercules or,
sure.
or Neptune.
Yeah.
These are characters that nobody really believes in anymore. But in this case, I think that in this case, it's even a step further, which is that it never begins with the idea that we believe in these characters.
Right.
That they touch on a lot of the same ideas. It's like a horror movie or a roller coaster can touch on the ideas of fear. You can feel these sort of ideas of fear. You can feel the adrenaline rush of fear, but you're in a safe place that you know that the fear isn't based on anything real.
Mm-hmm.
It's manufactured. That I can feel scared that somebody's about to be murdered in a horror film, but I know that person isn't real. I know they're not about to really die, but I can sort of allow myself through the suspension suspension of disbelief to go there, so I can feel these same things with Superman, but I don't get into the same sort of apologetic arguments with it.
Right.
The same way that I would with Neptune. It's I can just say Neptune is a jerk, Poseidon is a jerk in these stories, that he was a bad person to pick on Odysseus the way that he did.
Sure, but superheroes even borrow themselves. I mean, you said, what was JMS's good run was on Thor?
Yep.
Thor is in the deity graveyard.
Absolutely, and he's become a great fictional character.
Sure, sure. So, I have an update from the field, and that Ernest Borgnine has, in fact, he voiced the superhero Mermaid Man on SpongeBob SquarePants.
I just realized something. He did the voice of J. Jonah Jameson on the animated Spider-Man cartoon.
He did! Oh, God! Wow! That was the best part of that Superman, or the Spider-Man. I love that character. That's great. And I'm being given information about what Mermaid Man is. Do you know who Mermaid Man is?
Or? Not a clue.
I do.
Yeah. Okay, can you fill us in?
Well, he's a fictional superhero that is believed in by a fictional character, SpongeBob SquarePants, and he's kind of a parody of my favorite character, Aquaman.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I like it, though. The fact that they parody something I like means that my thing has sort of entrenched itself into the culture.
Yeah, yeah.
People know who Aquaman is.
So, yeah, I've got Mermaid Man as a superhero who lives in Bikini Bottom. SpongeBob SquarePants, his number one fan, has got him in a lot of trouble. He has his sidekick Barnacle Boy and have fought crime for 40 years. Or fought crime 40 years ago. He has fought many villains, including Man Ray, Dirty Bubble, Kelp Thing, and the Atomic Flounder.
Oh, I want to read that comic.
Ah, man. Okay, so comics.
We're talking about fictional characters here.
Yeah.
And I think Superman is not a real person. His stories aren't about real things that happened.
No.
And his stories aren't held up as these paragons of moral guidance and virtue. But the Bible is, and by every stretch of the imagination, both its characters, its stories, its lessons, for the most part, it fails on every front.
I agree. And to sort of bring it home, and I want to ask you guys both of this, since you're both comic book guys, is I'm not really into comic books. I'm a science fiction guy to the bone. And what I like about science fiction is that it posits situations that, while maybe not realistic, have sort of a verisimilitude on it. Its basic idea could possibly happen that causes you to stretch your mind in certain ways to encompass broader ideas, and I think that changes your morality. Like when, you know, with the standard clone story, is a clone a person or not? It's been done well, it's been done terribly, but as a result of these science fiction stories, we now are sort of preparing to have this moral question placed upon us as cloning technology sort of comes closer and closer to fruition, to the point where we might see human clones in our lifetime. And that's sort of what one of the things that I like about science fiction, and I'll be honest with you, just as you get your morality from comic books, I get a lot of mine from science fiction. I won't lie. And it's because of stuff like that, because it causes me to stretch my mind and anticipate things that could happen down the line.
Well, the truth is the best fiction is allegory.
Sure.
That not just, but sci-fi and comics and mythology, they sort of specialize in this sort of idea of we're talking about, you know, these two characters fighting some war, or, you know, this person deciding whether their android deserves the rights of a person, all these sorts of stories. But really what we're talking about is something in the modern era.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe the X-Men is really about racism. It's about whatever bigotry you want it to be,
right,
be honest. And it's the sort of racism and prejudice that the X-Men are supposed to represent and talk about, mm-hmm, changes based on the era.
But I'm specifically talking about, because you can get that sort of morality from literature that isn't fantastic. You know, there's a lot of great stories out there in literature that don't have lasers or moon explosions or Galactus or anything like that. But what comic books and sort of fantastic fiction does, I think, is cause you to sort of anticipate what might come down the road.
Mm-hmm. But I think the question also is, it takes it one step out sometimes, that you can talk about a contemporary issue. You're not even just the ones like cloning.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I am.
Oh.
No, yeah, I'm saying it does.
Oh, I agree.
This is what it does in addition to,
oh, absolutely,
what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that disguising it in some way, saying it's about robots, could make somebody who might not otherwise have like a prejudice or a bias look at something differently.
Like that thing with the X-Men toys. Do you guys remember that? Or where they there was some sort of VAT tax on dolls, on toys that were in the shapes of people, but if it was animals, they weren't under these tax. They said because they're mutants, they're not actually people, therefore we don't have to pay the extra tax. Do you remember this?
What, did Senator Robert Kelly write that? Mutants aren't people!
Oh, no.
Oh, jeez. It's a weird idea, but the idea that morality, you know, we should get our total morality from this book that was written, over a couple thousand years, several thousand years ago, before we had indoor plumbing, versus these, you know, okay, yeah, books that have Simpsons characters at the cash register when you buy them, and, you know.
We've come a long way since those books were written. There's been a lot of moral debates and public discussions that have happened since that. The very idea of democracy, the idea that we can pick our own leaders and not be subject to the whims of a king,
right?
That is something that is a discussion that never really happened by these people. These people took the divine rights of kings as a given. And in fact, all these people say, oh, rights come from the Bible. That's nonsense. The Bible doesn't talk about rights at all. It talks about your duties to this person who owns you.
Right.
It is about the king of the universe, and if you don't follow his rules, he's going to hurt you.
The Bible didn't...
Forever.
Forever. And as far as power structures, there was very little challenge to the status quo in these books.
Yeah, I'd say looking at this, and the version of, say, a superhero, I'd much rather look up to a character like Superman, who doesn't put conditions on saving people, that does something because helping people is an end in itself. They're not a mark to exploit for my own self-aggrandizement, for my own amusement, for my own profit. And when I see the characters of the Bible say, oh, look how wonderful Jesus is, he saved you. No, he basically has you under his thumb. That is not something to thank him for.
So if people want to get into it, if people want to see this, what should they read? I mean, what would you suggest them to look at?
Oh, that's like a 3-hour answer.
Okay, you got just something you can throw out there like that?
There's just comics. I say with comics, if you want to start somewhere, start wherever you want. If you don't understand something in it, look it up on the internet. If it isn't interesting to you, then pick something else.
And Wes, so we didn't really give you much of a chance to talk today, but you have your own podcast, don't you?
I do. I am also on the Atheist Nomads.
Okay.
Atheistnomads.com. We have 4 episodes out now, and so check us out also.
All right, and that's all we got time for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today was Mike Gillis and Wes Bonetti. Music is by Chris Coleman, as usual. Production assistants were Rebecca Friedman and Nick Kennedy. There is no post-show. Expect to hear that a lot in July. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv or voicemail us at 206-420-0997. See you guys next week!
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma.